Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guests are singer-songwriter Tom Manc and cellist Sarah Smolin, who have been performing and writing music together for over 20 years. Tom Manc is an independent singer-songwriter who has played in folk, blues, and bluegrass bands and has collaborated with numerous singers and instrumentalists around the Northeast. Dr. Sarah Smolin is a conservatory-trained cellist who performs in many genres and has appeared extensively with the Cougar Chamber Orchestra, Tri-Cities Opera, and the Mansfield University Piano Trio. Manc and Smolin have recorded 6 CDs together, and we'll be discussing and playing excerpts from the most recent collaboration called Swimming in the Dark, which was released in 2013. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I want to know how an independent singer-songwriter meets a cellist and how you two ended up collaborating.
Well, you hire her, that's what you do. That was the one I'm recording in 1994, and for some reason, I was thinking cello would be great on this, and the sound engineer said you should call Sarah. She's really great. And we did. I paid her to work on 3 songs, and we met and played music together, and then many years later, we reconnected.
Wow. So that's how it happened. I was thinking maybe you met at a gig. To tell us your meeting with Tom. How was that?
It was lovely. It was lovely. I really enjoy trying to make music with as many human beings in this world as I possibly can. So it's just a beautiful exercise to figure out a meeting place musically. So Tom decided to record his music. It was a decision in his life, and I was so honored to be part of that first recording of his.
Uh-huh. That sounds really fascinating. So Tom, you describe yourself as a self-taught singer-songwriter. Tell us how that came about. One day you picked up a pen and a guitar and just started writing?
Well, one day I picked up a guitar. I was 18 years old was the first time I played. And I loved music, started listening to a lot of music during that time. And I was in college and I was doing writing. It took a long time. I think I wrote songs for 10, 12 years before there was actually a song that was worth keeping, I think. But I kept at it.
Uh-huh. And were you
a late bloomer?
Were you following in the footsteps of some of the singer-songwriters that you admired at the time?
Yes.
Who named some of them? Was it people like Leonard Cohen or the Beatles or
yeah,
rock
Leonard
music?
Yeah, Leonard Cohen and the Beatles and Neil Young.
Uh-huh.
Then in the 80s, there were a lot of really great women songwriters that I was listening to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Tons of them. Joni Mitchell. I can name a bunch of them.
And Nancy Griffith and, yeah.
Some of them from the women's music community. Mm-hmm. So when you started writing songs, did you suddenly have a cello call your name? How did you, because most folk music does not incorporate instruments like this. So where did that vision come from?
For including a cello, I always loved the cello. I always loved the sound of the cello. I did not have classical music as a background at all. It wasn't something that my family did. My mom sang country music on her own. That was what she liked. So I was in Baltimore. So I liked it. I thought it was a beautiful instrument. And like I said, there were a few particular songs on the recording I was working on. I thought, wow, maybe cello. Yeah. Maybe there is a cellist in Ithaca. I don't even know.
There are several that we know of. I know you said you're trying to figure out ways to collaborate with as many different people as you can, but were you kind of scared crossing from traditional music and into something like folk and blues? And
originally, I really was. For me, David Darling was such a role model and such an inspiring musician that I actually wanted to meet him.
And tell us who he is.
David Darling is, I think of him as like the guru of improvising cello.
Ah.
I'm the assistant director of the New Directions Cello Festival, and we just had our 20th anniversary festival, and we just wanted to thank him for starting all of this. For so many cellists, they would say, I don't know who I would be without David Darling, and I am one of them. So I actually drove to his house and had a lesson with him. And he says, I'm one of the first people who ever did that. So I was in conservatory, in college, studying music, and I was terrified to improvise in front of this grand master.
Yeah.
But he made me feel so comfortable and at home. I actually feel as though we floated all around the world and then landed safely back in Connecticut, and I was never the same after that.
Ah, so that opened you to collaborating and figuring out new ways to use the cello, too. Interesting.
Yes, he started an organization called Music for People, and he's just a master teacher of improvisation.
I love that. I love the way people can give instruments new lives in so many ways. Now, I want to play an excerpt from Swimming in the Dark. This is kind of a bluesy piece. It's called Quiet of the Night. You want to tell us where it came from?
Oh, where do any of the songs come from?
But this is a little bit more jazzy. Some of your other songs that we'll be playing later are a little bit more thoughtful and heavy.
At the time, we had just met a blues harmonica player in the Netherlands, and I think I had him in mind when we were going on our next tour.
Klein Kromhoff.
Who's a great harmonica player, and I knew we were going to visit him, and he was going to join us on the tour, so I was in the blues kind of mind.
Uh-huh. Well, let's listen to an excerpt from it, Quiet of the Night.
Walking by the sea, the air so sweet. Walking by the sea, the air so sweet. Turn my eyes inside and hear my own heart beat. In the quiet of the night, quiet of the night, in the quiet of the night, quiet of the night.
I love that piece. You know, I love this kind of blues and collaboration of instruments. I almost felt like dancing around the room. Now, when you start writing a song like this, do you have the cello parts in mind, or do you and Sarah collaborate immediately and you say, I want to hear a riff here? Do you improv for the final version of these songs?
I really create the cello parts. And the incredible thing about the cello is that it functions as a bass when you want it to, like in the quiet of the night, I'm kind of playing the bass line.
Uh-huh.
And then the cello has this wonderful capacity. You can strum it, and it's like another guitar. And then you can play the cello and play along with the voices and be like a harmony voice part. And then you can play like a lead guitar solo on the cello. So it's just the greatest thing.
Yeah,
cello is such a wonderful...
No one would ever have thought it was so versatile, because I'm used to hearing it in classical music, and it's certainly a background player normally. So I'm not used to hearing it in this way. It's wonderful. Is that what attracted you to the cello? The fact that it's so versatile, or because it was haunting, or what was it?
When I hear the cello, I often feel like I'm hearing the voice of my own heart, almost whatever I hear it as.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And my husband is now trained. When you watch movies and documentaries, when the most amazing, remarkable thing happens, it's the cello. We look at each other, okay, there's the cello.
What were you going to say, Tom? You were going to add something?
I was going to say, when you're talking about the songs, usually I write the words and the music, and then we get together. And what Sarah has, an amazing ability to, she has like a blank slate at that point, and she can dip into all the different ways she knows to play the cello, and then it becomes something else. Sometimes we'll jam together and a song will come out of it, but primarily I write the words and music, or sometimes with another singer-songwriter, and then Sarah goes at it.
And then once you've recorded these songs, are they in concrete now, written down this way, the way Sarah improv them, or would it be different every time we heard them?
I would say that when I perform, I always practice. And the songs are similar. But as an improviser, when it comes time to improvise, I like to sincerely take a risk and make it fresh and make it somehow spontaneous. So when we perform, the pieces are a little bit different. but it's not unrecognizable.
I see, right? That really gave you the freedom to create different ideas and sounds. I love that.
Yeah, the recording's almost a snapshot of what was happening at that time. And if we perform it a year later or 2 years later, it's gone to another place, a different place, not better, not, it's just different.
Probably depending on your mood. Well, I want to play another track from Swimming in the Dark. This is a song you co-wrote and sing with Jeannie Burns from the Burns Sisters and now Harden Burns. Tell us about this song. It's called Green Apple.
This is actually, I mentioned the harmonica player Height. This was actually when I first went to visit, before Sarah joined me in Europe, and I visited at their house. And they went out on an errand somewhere, and they had just gotten married. And this actually was a song I wrote for them as a wedding gift.
Oh.
And the thing that you don't need to know about the song is that they had a VW van, which was green, and they called it the Green Apple. So when they share the Green Apple, it's sharing the Green Apple, and now they own the Green Apple together.
Oh, nice.
But it's also a metaphor for other things, but in this case, it was a wedding present for them.
Oh, that's great. let's listen to an excerpt from Green Apple. This is Tom Mank and Jeannie Burns.
I gotta fly, soar beyond my mind's eye. I gotta fly, this knowing I must try. Fly away, distance has music to play. Come with me and we can build a life. Come with me and we can be friends. Come with me and we can begin to share this green apple.
Wonderful. You know what? Jeannie Burns brings such a sound that is totally recognizable to anybody who's ever heard the Burns Sisters. Mm-hmm. And what is that? I have no idea what that is, but she brings a sound even though it's your song.
Mm-hmm. In a sense, like as an artist, anyone's job is to find their voice. And you use your medium. And if you can talk about your whole life in that medium, you've probably found your voice. So I think what you're saying is that Jeannie, her essence, comes through her own voice.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Tom Mank and Sarah Smolin. We're talking about their latest CD called Swimming in the Dark. Now, you collaborate on this CD mm-hmm. with a whole bunch of people in the Netherlands mm-hmm. in different parts of the country. How do you pull that all together? Do people send little pieces to you?
There's a little bit of that. It's primarily recorded in the studio of a producer in Woodstock, Julie Last. But the concept at that time, now we not only knew Height, the harmonica player who lived in Zeeland in the Netherlands, but also Kathy Ziegler plays keyboards and sings, and she lives in Harlem.
Yeah.
And then Amy Merrill lives in Olen in Belgium, and we hook up with them when we tour. And the thinking was, I could find a studio to go in, and I took the tracks with me, and then they added their instruments and vocals in the studio in Belgium. So in the modern world, this is what you can do.
Yeah, that's fascinating, isn't it, that they can bring all that stuff together from across the world.
So it was fascinating and enjoyable to do that. It was great.
Yeah, and so do you have to make changes, though? I mean, if you need to change something, is that kind of an arduous task if somebody's across the world?
In the mixing?
Yeah.
Well, you just go into the mixing stage of a CD.
Pro Tools, which is a recording software, different recording engineers engage with the software in their own way. And it's interesting to watch them look at the other recording engineers' paradigm for how they use it. So there was a little bit of that, but it's very fascinating.
Yeah.
It's just kind of magical that you can send these tracks across the ocean and collaborate with friends.
And the other part of it, it was not only collaborating, but there was a lot of collaborating with other singer-songwriters on that as well. For instance, talking about the Green Apple with Jeannie Burns, my part was the chorus and the music, and Sarah worked out the tag, but they didn't really have lyrics to the verses. So I took it to Jeannie and said, I bet you can write about those. And she just nailed it. It was what I was feeling and things she was feeling. And that happened with a couple other singer-songwriters as well, really.
Well, that just proves these collaborations are fruitful and meant to be, right? Not everybody could get along in that way. Now, what is it like for you, sir, as somebody who was trained in classical and has a lot of experience, performing before an audience of people who are not sitting there attentively dressed up, you know? I mean, it's more of a rowdy crowd most of the time, isn't it? Is that enjoyable, or does it distract you?
It's totally enjoyable. And performing is another art besides practicing and rehearsing and recording. And it takes courage for everyone to really show themselves in a performance. And that's not different in classical music or in alternative styles. So it's just been a great pleasure for me. Like when you understand musical structure and you can improvise that, it enhances my understanding of musical structure. And when I can improvise in different styles, it only enhances my understanding of style. Uh-huh. And all the different keys that you use, whether you're in classical music or jazz or blues or what have you, you understand that key center on your instrument even more, the more different styles that you can play.
Ah, nice.
Also, in the Netherlands, so we don't play the bars as much, so they aren't rowdy crowds. You can practically hear pin drop when you're playing at these venues.
Oh, so they're more formal than I was thinking.
Attention.
Well, in Europe, they listen differently. They're ready to be touched. They're ready to be altered by the music that they hear. Music is in the DNA of that culture. Whereas in our culture, perhaps we have more sound pollution or too much background music or too much media or something. And people attend a concert in a different way.
Yeah, I've had other people tell me that actually spend time in Europe. I want to play another excerpt from Swimming in the Dark. This is a serious piece. This is called Sergeant Oliver. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about it. I was surprised that it was about the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I read a lot as well. I read a lot of nonfiction, historical, and I was actually reading about World War I, this book. It was actually, I'm trying to remember the name of the book, but it was about the poets who went to war, actually.
Oh, like Rupert
Brooke.
About
the poets.
Yeah.
And then they start talking about this guy, Sergeant Oliver, and they start talking about in 1915, after the spontaneous 1914 Christmas where the soldiers came out of the trenches in 1914. In 1915, they said, that will never happen again. We'll shoot our own soldiers to make sure it doesn't happen. Somehow both sides kind of unofficially agreed to that, and I guess it really happened, at least to this one Scottish sergeant.
And so you wrote
so
this song about it.
Moved to write a song about him.
Let's listen to an excerpt from it.
Descended postal ground, the moon is stepping out on the cloud. Peace in my heart. Think I'll pass it all around. It's Christmas 1915. After all.
I found that piece really moving, especially those last lines about morphine. God.
Yeah,
it's
well,
amazing.
Evidently, at the time, that was the thing, the perfect gift for your husband or your father would be to go to Harrods in London and buy some morphine and send it to the front. That was like the perfect gift for for the holiday.
that's really, it's an amazing song.
Yeah.
I'm sure people are very attentive when they hear that, especially in the Netherlands. You know.
We played that on November 11th in Brugge, in Belgium.
At a house concert. It was the first time we ever played it live
anywhere. And what was November 11th? You mean September 11th?
No, November 11th. November 11th. Armistice Day.
Oh, Armistice Day. Right, right. Okay. Wow. Now, I know a lot of groups who get together just for a few years and they hang around and do stuff. How did you guys keep your collaboration together for 20 years?
Total great pleasure. Total great, great pleasure.
And you must have a friendship along with this, right? I mean, and
we're married.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're married.
Well, then you do have a friendship. I honestly did not know you two were married.
We just go to the practice room.
See, see, listeners, I just learned something new. I see, but that is amazing that somebody can do a creative job like this and have a marriage. I see now. That very interesting.
It's like going on a date when we have give a concert. It's like the night gets to be about us.
And, that's really really interesting. So I understand why you like to travel together.
We're very close, and it's interesting that when we play with other people, the chemistry of other people actually draws us out in some good ways.
Well, before we run out of time, I want to play a final excerpt. This is from Swimming in the Dark, of course, and it's called Liberate the Sun. Tell me about this one. I found this one really beautiful, about longing and hope and, you know, a little bit of melancholy.
It was, sometimes you have an idea that kind of hangs around a while, and then eventually I sat down and had time to write about it, but I was thinking about the 60s and everything that people wished could happen. You could end war and end hunger, and I was thinking, well, some things have changed and it all didn't happen. I was just trying to put it into words, and that was the best I could do.
Oh, it's beautiful. Let's listen to an excerpt from it. Yeah, you know, it felt like a song that only somebody who's lived through, you know, a period of time, like all of us have, obviously, from the 60s and so on. It's an amazing song, and it is filled with hope. Do you feel hope, both of you, about the world? I know you write melancholy music and beautiful music and celebratory music, but the world is kind of crazy right now.
Yeah, sure.
Ezra Pound said, an artist is an antenna for the race. And it's fascinating how artists really see the world and feel the world and sometimes feel the things the world is not encouraging you to see and feel. And yet our job is to hold that in our hearts in such a way that we can make beauty out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you listen to Bach, you can hear how so many children died in childbirth and how many diseases they couldn't fix. And you can just hear the great sadness along with the deep love and admiration people have had for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And just feeling that gamut of emotions makes us all more whole.
Mm-hmm. And so you think art can save the world? I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also for me on a personal level, in 1990 I had a heart valve, aortic valve replaced, which kind of really got me going, oh, boy, when I get out of here, I'm going to start playing some music and doing more writing and collaborating. So that was 24 years ago, and I'm very happy to be around. I enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the next generation is going to do a really good job.
Did you also have an appreciative feeling for classical music like Sarah does? Or is it totally separate for your life?
I enjoy it now. I go to her concerts, but I had no exposure to it. In fact, you'd sit down with a classical musician and you're playing the blues. I thought, this is going to be so embarrassing for them. It's like the basic thing in music. And I said, oh, blues, we learned that in 101, you know. Learn it at all.
He thought every classical musician started with the blues.
That's really interesting.
And what's fascinating to me, too, is that Tom will tune his guitars to these quite exotic tunings, and then he'll play chords that he has found on a totally intuitive basis, and I'll identify what chord it is.
Wow.
So sometimes he doesn't know what notes there are, and so I will write down, you know. So we have a lovely exchange because I did not play the blues.
Yeah.
And it was very liberating for me to learn the blues. I recommend it.
Well, I recommend listening to it, too. Oh, we're almost out of time. Anything new you're working on? Any new CDs can we expect in the coming days, coming months or years?
There's four singer-songwriters I'm collaborating with at the moment. And if that keeps in that vein, I kind of hope to have a CD out in a few years with songs, with all collaborations. We were actually thinking of having a second songwriter and a second vocalist on each song, and then have Sarah and another instrumentalist to have kind of like these quartets.
Oh, nice.
That's a great idea. That's an idea that may or may not happen, but it's starting that way.
Great.
I'm enjoying
Do you have any contact information? Can people get in touch with you? Website you want to hand
out? TomMank.net. TomMank.
.net.
That's where we have, there's videos and songs there, and you can buy CDs there as well and listen.
Okay. Well,
I'm also a teacher, and my website is sarahsmolin.com. I really, really love teaching, and I love teaching all my students how to play classical music and improvise. I co-wrote a book with a friend called Improvising String Quartets. And we've been enjoying very much sharing with the world these ideas.
Great, great. Well, Tom Mank and Sarah Smolin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, their CD is called Swimming in the Dark. Go get it. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.